How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Jen?
Hey there, Cam. How are you?
I'm well. I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm sorry. Doing great.
I stuttered over that.
This is the last official episode of 2021.
Last
episode. Hard to believe. In a few days, we will be releasing the fourth annual 12 Nightmares Before Christmas. Amazing. Yep. We got some good cases this year.
Amazing.
For the 12 Nightmares. So everybody be prepared.
Put on your headphones and smile at your family when you're wrapping presents and pretend like you like them. What can I say?
They're not there.
Just kidding. All right, Jen, I got a case for you. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
Dive right in. Today, we are venturing to Honesdale, Poconos. You know the Poconos.
Poconos.
Right?
I do know the Poconos.
Used to
honeymoon.
It's a small city in northern Pennsylvania, if you're not from around there.
70s and 80s, every game show would offer a trip for two as a prize.
With the champagne bathtubs.
Heart-shaped bathtubs. Yep.
Yep. Okay,
so it was cheesy, fun Pocono getaways. Yeah.
In 1986, a young teenage couple was out and enjoying their summer nights of fun. They were trying to make the most of their days off and of their freedom. Just as many teens do, they make more than a few bad decisions, but one would pay for that poor choice with her life. This tragic event would lead to yet another tragedy, but this could have all been prevented. Kristen Unstatter was a student at Honesdale High School. She was more than just a student. Kristen had good grades and was popular with students and staff. She was voted class president both her junior and senior year of high school. And the ever so elusive for you and me, that is, she was also voted homecoming queen.
Oh, yeah.
She was editor of the yearbook, and she would walk away with more than a few superlatives. She won for friendliest, best looking, and most likely to succeed.
Nice.
Kristen's parents owned a small store called the Lookout General Store, where it would sell everyday items. This is a pretty small little town, so it's sort of like a quick stop. I'm sure everybody knows what that is. Kristen was the youngest of three children and the only girl. She worked hard in school, and she had a part-time job waiting tables at the townhouse diner after school and on weekends. She was thrilled to be graduating and organized a sober breakfast after her prom. And she was one of the founding members of the school's chapter of SAD, which then was Students Against Drunk Driving. It's since changed to Students Against Destructive Decisions.
Oh, if you didn't know that. I did not know that. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you know what? 1986 is when I think that came to our school, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Kristen even went public with her crusade against underage drinking and driving under the influence. She recorded PSAs that would run on the local radio station, warning teens about the dangers of doing these risky behaviors. Part of the reason Kristen was so involved with this cause was that her older brother, Travis, was a major partier. Mm-hmm. As a 19-year-old, Travis had earned quite the reputation as what you would call a big partier. He would also find himself in some minor trouble, but nothing too bad, just kind of a little rebel. A little, you know,
normal teenager. Yeah.
From the 80s. It was a different time than Jen, as we all know. He was also very close to his sister, Kristen, always looking after her, as big brothers do. Kristen had a plan to leave Honesdale as soon as she graduated. Everyone who knew her knew that she would leave that small town behind and she would be on to bigger and better things. Kristen had been awarded a full ride scholarship to Temple University. She had a good head on her shoulders and she made good decisions, except for one thing that would change everyone's life. His name was Glenn Evans.
It's always a boy.
It's always a boy. Glenn was not a bad kid, per se, but most people were surprised that Kristen would even look twice at this young man, much less date him. Glenn was what the youngins call today country. That's what they do in my high school. He's country. She's country. But what we used to call back in the day, a good old boy. He worked on cars and he drank and he drank and he worked on cars and he would work on cars as he drank and he would drink as he worked on cars.
So he liked to work on cars
and drink. With New York State only about 20 miles away via Route 652, it became the haven for the young with a fake ID or an older friend in tow. On August 10th, Glenn asked Kristen to go to the old Wayne County Fair and watch the demolition derbies that bring back memories for you, Jen.
Oh, yeah.
Now, for those of you who did not grow up in small town USA.
Demo derbies.
Many of these small towns have the local fair. Mm-hmm. And that's where everybody comes out, rides the carnival games. But one of the big nights, you know, usually they have a performer that's like a C-list country star or rock star performing. And that'd be on Saturday night. And Friday night, you had the old demolition derby.
Which usually coincided with what? The greased pig contest, where you had to go get a grease, try to catch a greased pig.
That was usually the opening act, if you will. Mm-hmm. And the demolition derby, basically, if you don't know, is it's a car that barely runs and you spray paint it and you make it knock off the windows. And you basically, it's like bumper cars, but with real cars in mud and people cheer for you.
And you hit other cars until the car basically dies.
Dies. Mm-hmm. And the last man, last car running,
one
standing wins.
Yep.
Right?
Ah, simple times.
Right. So that was their first date, and they did seem to have a connection. They had known each other. Kristen's older brother, Travis, knew Glenn. They were classmates. They weren't friends, but they knew of each other. On August 15th, Kristen would drive to a local bar called Cooster's Lounge with two of her very best friends. Here, the women bought 12 beers, and then they departed, where they would drive around and drink. The three of them would consume a six-pack as they made their way over to Glenn's apartment. When they arrived, Glenn and his friend were at the apartment, and the men had already put down a 12-pack. They were working on their 13th plus when the women came to the apartment. After hanging out for a bit, they decided to go out and get what? That's right, some more beers. Around 11 p.m., the group climbed into Glenn's car, a 1971 Plymouth Duster, and made their way to Route 652. Now, this road was a dangerous one, seeing that more than its fair share of fatal car accidents over the years. Mm-hmm. Now, here's where things get a little bit fuzzy, obviously, because they were all drinking. Glenn, always so proud of his car, refused to let anyone else drive it, even though he had been drinking, and drinking more than the ladies. During the drive, Glenn was speeding, perhaps showing off, maybe just being a kid. One of the women told him to pull over so she could drive. He would not allow it. The teens had made it to just outside of Beach Lake, and they were moving at a speed of around 80 miles per hour. As the Duster approached a car, Glenn decided to pass the car. As Glenn was next to the vehicle that he was speeding past, another car, I think it was a station wagon, topped the hill, causing Glenn to smash directly into the car. While all the others would survive this tragedy, the accident would cause Kristen to lose her life. The extreme force of the impact caused Kristen's aorta to rupture, causing her to bleed to death. Glenn and another passenger suffered broken legs, but would recover.
It's heartbreaking.
Glenn was drinking, and he was drinking and driving, and this accident caused loss of life. Someone would have to pay. Someone would have to be punished, and that should be Glenn. There would be more than a few charges, and those would include driving under the influence, involuntary manslaughter, reckless driving, vehicular homicide, and vehicular homicide while under the influence. None of these charges were good, but with vehicular homicide, DUI, means under the law, you would have to serve at least a minimum of 3 years in prison. Glenn would be punished, or at least he should have been punished.
Mm.
Now, remember, this is a small town, and, well, seems like officers didn't get blood from Glenn straight away to test it. In fact, it was a few hours after the accident happened that they were able to get a blood alcohol test done on him. When they got the test done, it showed a blood alcohol level of 0.9. At this time in Pennsylvania, the illegal limit was 1.0. Glenn was just under that limit.
After 2 hours, or yeah.
By a tenth to be considered driving under the influence, which, you know, if he was tested right away,
it would have gone way higher. Over. Mm-hmm.
Knowing that the test was delayed by hours, the district attorney wanted to file charges against Glenn Evans for the death of Kristen Umstadter. Honesdale was split and confused on the charges. Some believed it was just an accident and they were all drinking, you know, while others were adamant that the driver should pay for the death of Kristen. Most of the teens in town were already devastated over the loss of Kristen and believed that losing her was enough. Why lose Glenn to prison? However, Kristen's brother Travis was clear on one thing. Glenn Evans killed his little sister, and just a few years in prison, that's not going to work. That's not going to be enough for Travis. He did not like that at all.
No.
So here's where the rumors start. And, you know, everybody knows everybody. Like, you not only know the kids, you know the parents, you know their grandparents. Your parents work with them. Everybody knows everybody.
Your parents went to school with their parents. Mm-hmm. Grandparents went to school with their grandparents. Oh, yeah.
So you can understand how things were a little...
I could hear it now.
Little...
You know him. He's old Jim's boy. He's Jim's boy. You know Jim down at the shop.
Down at the filling station.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, you know him. We saw him down at Walmart's the other day.
He's a good kid. He just drinks a little. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
We all did.
So here's where this all starts. All the rumors start. All the this and that. And she was doing this and he was doing that. The he said, she said, did they do this or did they not? All that comes into play. Glenn would claim that Travis would threaten him around town. So Glenn would say he'd run into Travis and Travis's dad, which would be Kristen's dad as well. And they would, you know, mean mug him, give him dirty looks. They would hold up a hand, like in the shape of a pistol. I'm doing this, like, with my hands now,
like,
as if
I
you could see
you.
It. But, you know, and just threatening things, yelling at him, calling him names, flipping him the bird, raising fist, you know, just tormenting him a little bit. Glenn and Travis are the same age, by the way. Glenn, on the other hand, was not exactly helping his case or cause. Now, this could be chalked up to just being a dumb kid, or was he just trying to be the cool guy? It could go either way.
At that age, Glenn, used to say, they're still trying to...
Yeah. Glenn would get another car right away, and he was back to speeding and running around as if he didn't have a care in the world.
Death wish then, too.
I do wonder that, too, that you're so... Because he kept drinking, he kept doing everything he was doing before. Rumors started that he was dating another local girl right after this accident. I mean, it was mere weeks and he already had another girlfriend. It was the one statement that was hard to let slide by. Glenn apparently was telling friends that the accident would have never happened if Kristen had not grabbed the wheel. In fact, the accident, it was really all her fault that it happened at all.
Yeah.
The tension was rising when, in January, Glenn's trial began. Now, due to the fact that the blood alcohol was just shy of illegal, Glenn would not be charged with DUI nor be charged with vehicular manslaughter DUI. On January 21st, Glenn would stand in court and listen as he would learn his fate. Glenn will be charged with vehicular homicide without DUI. This was a much lighter charge, and Kristen's family was not happy, to say the least. Glenn was to face sentencing at the end of January, but he would not be there to be sentenced. Just after midnight, there was a knock at Glenn's door. Glenn, who was chatting on the phone with his new girlfriend, whose name was Jean Marie, and he asked her to hold so that he could answer the door. When Glenn returned, he was shaken, and he told her, quote, Travis Umstetter's here, and he looks like he's going to kick my ass. Just what happened after Glenn hung up the phone is up for interpretation. Lee Krause was asleep in bed when his phone started ringing around 3 a.m. on January 28th. On the other end was a frantic woman. It was Travis and Kristen's mother telling the attorney something terrible had happened and he needed to come to their house as soon as possible. When Lee Krause arrived to the home, he was greeted by a very drunk and very upset Travis. Travis was crying hysterically, and he could barely get out what happened. The attorney was able to decipher that Travis had done something to Glenn, but Travis was not sure how badly Glenn was hurt. He was really, really drunk, by the way.
Doesn't matter. I know.
No, I know, but I'm saying that it's a mess. Lee tried to calm the family down, but did tell them that they needed to call police and they needed to do it right now. The state police arrived at the house and tried to interview Travis, but in his extremely inebriated state, they didn't get too far. Travis did say that he could not remember exactly what happened and thought that he had blacked out. He knew he went to Glenn's apartment, but that was about it. That's all he could tell officers.
No.
Officers went to Glenn's apartment, and it was there they located 20-year-old Glenn Evans dead from what would be 4 bullet wounds to the head. Troopers would recover a .22 revolver from Travis's vehicle, and this just so happened to be the type of gun used to kill Glenn. Ballistics would come back, proving that this was, in fact, the gun that killed Glenn. On February 19, 1987, Travis brought himself to police and turned himself in for the murder of Glenn Evans. Similar to what happened after the death of Kristen, the town was split on the death of Glenn. Some believe Glenn deserved it with his big mouth and careless attitude. Others believe Travis had no right to do what he did to Glenn, seeing how the justice system was already taking its course. In September 1987, Travis faced a judge and jury in which the prosecutor would claim that Travis, in a drunken fit, was out for murder and revenge, and he wanted Glenn to pay for it. They would be seeking a conviction of first-degree murder. The defense, on the other hand, would claim that Travis was overcome with grief, and after getting intoxicated, he went to Glenn's residence to simply talk to him. But things got heated, and Travis was simply defending himself when Glenn came at him with scissors, which actually turned out to be not scissors, but forceps.
A little different. Yeah.
Kind of weird. The jury would decide whether Travis should be charged with first-degree murder or go with something else, such as voluntary manslaughter or even third-degree murder. On the stand, Glenn's girlfriend would testify that it was she he was talking to on the phone when Travis arrived. She would state in court that she heard a loud noise, which we would presume would be the knock or the banging of the door. She would testify that Glenn put the phone down to answer the door. Her quote was, "I heard Glenn say, 'What the hell are you doing here?'" She testified. She said that he then picked up the phone and said, "Travis Umstetter's here. He's going to kick my ass," which I said earlier. In a panic, Jean Marie told Glenn to go get his brother. Glenn lived with his brother in that apartment. She then hung up. The most damning testimony would come from a friend of Travis's by the name of Doug Smith. Doug Smith would tell officers that on the night of the shooting, Doug and Travis were riding around and drinking, really, and Doug saw the gun in the car. Now, he thought it was odd since Travis never had carried a gun before. Seems that the gun was under the seat and it made its way out from underneath the seat because Travis slammed on the brakes to avoid hitting a deer. And it fell forward, right? So the gun came out from underneath the seat.
Right.
Doug would also testify that Travis had told him that he missed his sister, but he was going to get even. Travis would take Doug home that night shortly before midnight. And it was right after that that Travis would arrive at Glenn's apartment after he dropped Doug off. After the jury was handed the case, they would deliberate for around 4.5 hours before reaching a decision. Travis Umstetter was convicted of third-degree murder and received the maximum penalty, which was 10 to 20 years in prison. Travis served approximately 10 years, and in January 1998, he was released from a halfway house. Now, there's a book on this story entitled Blood and Revenge, A True Story of Small Town Murder by Michael Dorman. And a quote that was in the defense attorney for Glenn Evans for the accident trial. His name is attorney Robert N. Bryan. He said that the quote was, and it kind of struck home with me, his quote was, "It's ironic. The family already lost a daughter and now could lose a son over a daughter who could not be brought back." Which is true. It's just, it's terrible all around. They lost a daughter and then their son goes to prison.
They lost their children with one accident.
But I mean, changes a life. And it was just a different time, you know. Not that it's horrible all the way around, but thank goodness. I mean, for the most part, I think kids are a lot smarter than we were.
Well, hell, they didn't even have seatbelt laws back then.
They never wore a seatbelt. Yeah, it's fine.
No,
it's
it wasn't until like the 90s.
In the car. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What? We would go in one car with nine girls?
Oh, yeah. More. Yeah. You sit on laps and stuff?
Yeah. No, I know. It's devastating. That's tragedy.
We're looking at this because there were yearbook pictures of her. I mean, this was our high school. I just kept thinking this because we lived in the middle of nowhere, too. And nights were spent driving on those windy roads. Scary
going
stuff.
Going quick and drinking.
So he did.
Lots.
I believe he is still out there. I found him, but I'm not going. That would
oh,
be.
No.
I would never say that, but yeah, because I just terrible, terrible stuff. So yeah,
it's a heartbreaking story, tragedy all around,
and in a small town. I mean, oof, it just terrible, terrible.
Yeah, tragedies all around. Just like the latest school shooting in Oakland High School in Michigan.
There's no words, and then the parents' behavior.
Oh,
I don't even, another Brian Laundry
case. That's all I can think of. Another.
I almost think it's worse.
They abandoned their child.
They're making a run for it. They were going to leave that kid behind.
I mean,
see ya.
Sure, they failed him. They failed that kid all around. From what it sounds like right now, without knowing anything about him except that he was drawing things, saying the thoughts won't stop. They made the kid go back to school, even though the school wanted them to take him home. And they said, no, we're not going to take him home. They kept the kid in school. They bought him the gun.
I want to see how this plays out.
No, it'll be interesting to see how the school plays this and how, if any charges will come against the school. I am honestly glad to see that the parents were brought up on charges.
I hope it changes things going forward. I hope maybe if a parent has a child and they're seeing these things or they're called in, they will act better and do the right thing and get the child help, yank him out of school.
I normally don't like to blame the parents, but for this one, it doesn't look like
there's any other options. I hope if there's, you know, if somebody's worried about your child, there's a reason. So I would hope that the parents, going forward, if...
Well, the fact that as soon as the mother heard that there was a school shooting, she texted her son and said, "Ethan, don't do it." That makes me believe that once she knew that he was either thinking of shooting up the school or thinking of harming himself.
But and the father runs home to see if the guns that he gave his son is still there, and it's not. So he calls 911 and says the gun's gone.
Right. So they knew something was up and they didn't. It seems to me that they knew something was up and they didn't address it. And they still bought him the gun. Like the gun was only 4 days old.
Yes.
That's problematic right there.
Yes.
It's heartbreaking. And I know they do this a lot, but when the last boy was dying, the Justin Schilling, they were transporting him to the hospital so they could, he was an organ donor, so they could take his organs, harvest the organs. All these people like stood in front. They had this vigil in front of the hospital.
A child should not have to, you know what I mean? Like there's no reason a child should be an organ donor and no parent should have to go through that.
No.
That's awful.
It's just horrible. It's scary with kids in school. You being a high school teacher, it's got to be scary. I mean, we live in Missouri where the gun laws are probably some of the most lax in the country. I'm not going to lie. I get scary. My oldest was just going to school when Sandy Hook happened. Sometimes I wonder, since nothing was done about Sandy Hook, if anything's ever going to be done about it. And I'm pro-gun, so... Nobody come at me for saying anything. I'm totally pro-gun.
This is mental illness, though,
well,
for
it's
sure.
More than mental illness. It delves deep into... Anyway, changing the subject to a little brighter thing, what have you been watching?
You mean, what haven't I been watching?
No. I'm a little addicted to the TV.
Yeah. Watched Dexter this morning.
Well, good. Have been.
And also, if anybody out there is watching the show, I just need to understand exactly what's happening. Yellow Jackets with Juliette Lewis. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of confused as I finished four episodes and I'm no more in the clear than I was then, the first episode.
Yeah, we're waiting till it closes out.
Yeah.
And then we're going to start watching that. It's one I went to. I love Juliette Lewis. She plays her characters very well.
She's a little rough around the edges.
A little crazy, little
say
trashy.
Say the least.
Yeah.
Yes.
I like her a lot. I've been in happy mode, or trying to be in happy mode. I want to be a huge thanks to Camille for coming in clutch. I should say not crutch, but clutch, because I've been trying to write an episode that I wanted to do before the 12 Nightmares Before Christmas happened, because it kind of coincides with my second one, day number two. But I wasn't able to get it done for reasons. So she was nice enough and she hurried up and made the script for us. So yeah, I will be doing that episode, the first one back, when we come back on July 13th.
July? We're taking 6 months off?
See how my brain works? It's a J, January. So January 13th, yeah. So big thanks to you for doing that. But
you're welcome.
For me, yesterday, I kind of de-escalated myself and caught up on my Gogglebox obsession.
Okay.
For my British Gogglebox, which I adore that show. I can't help it. VPN, it's on Channel 4, channel4.com. I love it. It's a British show, and it just makes me happy. I can't tell you. It's kind of like the lamest idea, with just different families watching different TV shows. Families watch the shows, and I love it. I can't help it.
You're like
it makes
one of
me
those
laugh.
Kids that watches on, you know, you watch a kid play video games.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, kind of, but this is funny. Some of the people on there are good personalities. I will say my favorite one is Dave Malone, but Dave Malone is a Rottweiler. So tells you a little bit about me.
Oh, does he speak too?
No, but he's...
I need to be worried about you, Jen?
No, he's just always laying tummy up with his head on his owner's lap. I just love him. He's kind of a character on the show if you watch it. It's just fun. I love Dave. Yeah.
Hey, right now we all need a little happy time, right?
And that's,
we all need a little happy time.
It's totally brainless. And basically, it's an hour-long ad for TV shows. That's all it is. And I've got there's a movie that I want to watch called Come With Me that they've been advertising on this. And it's with Christopher Eccleston, which was Doctor Who number 9. Mm-hmm. And it looks really good, murder mystery. So I'm going to have to try to find it and see if I can watch it.
Okay.
Or maybe not murder mystery, but she was pushed down the stairs and she lost her memory, I guess.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so she's now trying to find
out
who she
her
is. No, find out who she is. People, I think, are gaslighting her is what it sounds like.
Oh.
So it's kind of like a thriller type thing that I've got to find it and watch it. And if you've watched it, let us know.
Yeah.
Tell me if it's worth my time to try to find it.
And if it's not, you let me know and I'll watch it, because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. You watch everything.
I'll watch anything. Yeah.
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 But that's pretty much it. I've just been trying to think happy thoughts.
Yeah. Okay.
Keep going.
And getting ready for the old holidays.
The old holidays. Got the tree up finally. We just got a cat in July. That's what I probably was thinking. Seriously, in July. And he loves it. The cat's name is Chad. And he's pretty much living in the tree now.
That one is a Christmas card. It is the cutest thing. And mm-hmm. the way the lights lit up his face, peeking through the branches, it's mm-hmm. the cutest.
He's adorable. He's like a little orange kitty. And he climbs
send out a
all
card
the
and
way.
Say, love Chad
love
and
Chad.
The Flanders.
He climbs all the way to the top. And yeah, we got the tree new last year. I think it's a 12-foot tree. I'm not for sure. It's a tall tree. And he climbs all the way up to the top. Got the tree last year. And he's already broken the lights. And the lower branches are now way low.
He's just making himself at home.
Yep.
Right? He's just pretending like he's out.
Middle of the night, I hear all the ornaments.
Scouting for mice.
He's batting all the ornaments all over the floor. It's
cute,
fun.
I love it.
But what about you? What are you doing for the holidays? Anything fun? You've got all your gifts wrapped and things and such?
I did wrap a couple presents last night. I did two, to be exact.
Good for you.
Thanks.
I
get a head start. What can I say?
I have to force my kids. They're 15 and 13. And I was like forcing them to get a Christmas list out of them. I'm like, I don't know what you want. I don't want to buy you things. You're especially at that age. When they're little, it's easy. You just buy them anything and they love it. But now they've got taste.
And dang it, those
different
teenagers.
From mine. Yeah, they finally gave me their list. And now I'm like, okay. And I got everything down that we want to buy them. And I keep every day getting, okay, I want to add this to the list, or I want to add this to the list. So
she's like, ooh, sorry, shop closed at midnight last night. Sorry.
We're still pretty much just trying to figure everything out. It's fun. It's just so, I miss when they were little. I really do. For Christmas, it was so much more. Christmas was so much fun.
Really was.
When they were little.
Except, I got to be honest, when they're bigger, I don't know. It's just,
those easier years are now that they're awesome. Bigger, but it was more fun.
One of the things, and let me bring this up, and let's not be judgmental here, but there's like this new thing. Maybe it's new to me, but they're choosing to not have Santa be,
not telling anybody about Santa and
having their children know what's up from the get-go.
Gotcha.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
What am I saying? No kid is going to be listening to this podcast.
They're
choosing not to tell their children. They're saying Santa is fiction. He's fake. And some people choose to believe in him, but the presents come from mommy and daddy. And mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if you're good. We love you no matter what. And I was like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's part of the magic. That's part of what made Christmas fun. And for me, I'm glad Santa brought all our gifts and didn't rely on mom and dad for the gifts.
Mm-hmm. Why? So if you hated him, it was Santa's fault?
No, it just made more, I don't know, it was more magical that way. My kids were excited about Santa. That was the whole thing. They were excited. As much as I hated Elf on the Shelf, my kids loved it. And every morning, it was so much fun just to see
stressful.
Them. It was stressful for us, but for the kids, it was amazing and it was magic. And to me, Christmas should be about magic. And I was told the truth about Santa very early on in my life. And I don't know, I didn't get to experience it like my kids did. You know what I mean? I wish I could have experienced it like my kids were. It would have made Christmas better.
I guess the thing is, it's a trust issue that as a parent, you start lying to your child young.
Are you lying to them about anything that matters?
But today it's Santa. Easter Bunny's next, you know?
Where's so are you it saying in? It's a slippery slope?
It's a slippery slope. Hey, I'm just saying, like, this is a new thing that I heard about recently. And
I know people have been doing that. And I know some kids get it creepy. I mean, Santa doesn't.
It is kind of the fact there's a strange,
Santa watches
strange old
you?
Guy. Go sit on his lap.
Or
that's weird.
That Santa is always watching. That's kind of creepy. That's little gets you a little paranoid. But other times it's just, you know, be good or we are not going to get you a lot of presents for Christmas if you're not good. I mean, then that's just bribery. At least with Santa, it's...
Sorry, I did it.
You're covered.
Started at the beginning of November. You know what's coming. You know what's Christmas coming. You better be good. You better be good. And see, that they say that that's terrible too, but I don't know. I'm just glad my kids are older and I don't have to worry about
that. To each their own.
That's
live
right.
And be happy.
But anyway, from us to yours, we want to wish you a very happy holiday season. Hope it's not too stressful. Hope you get some days off. Hope we get some snow. That's what I'm talking about. I want some snow.
It needs to get below 60 degrees here for it to have snow. So
I was like, we're going to have a tornado in December because it's like 75 degrees. Are you kidding me?
Most likely. And don't forget, and this comes out on the 8th, in just a few days, on the 13th, we start our 12 Nightmares Before Christmas series.
You will get an episode every single, more Jen and Cam than you've ever wanted in your whole life.
Exactly. It's
12
gonna be,
episodes, 12 days.
And it starts on the 13th and ends on Christmas Eve. We've got some good, interesting cases for you. Many of them you have not heard. Very frequently, I believe. So it'll be fun.
Check it out.
Entertaining.
Until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Happy holidays.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Hello, Nico. It's Cam Dog.
All right. Hi, Nico. It's our last episode of the year for 2021.
Duh.
That's amazing. Duh. Another Duh. Year down.
I know, right? Who would have thunk it, Jen?
I know.
Not I. Not I, my friend. This reminded me so much of us. This is all of this. Like, and it was the picture of the girl was us, everything. 1986, the hair, the 16, clothes,
mm-hmm.
drinking, driving, all of it. Terrible. So here we go.